True crime today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to today's edition of the program. It is Friday, December 9th of 2022, and we are recording this. And today's episode, a recap, a lot of what went down over the week. There has been, there's been events, but at the end of the week, I don't know that we're a whole lot further, at least in the public-facing part of this investigation. A scream, a white Hyundai Elantra, private investigators, frustration, and assurance, I think kind of sums up what we saw throughout the week today from a lot of the individuals involved in this case, whether it be from Kaylee Gonzalez's father, Steve, to the chief of police speaking out and putting a more personal voice, if you will, or image on this from the professionals, the police department. And some questions and some interesting reports that have come out throughout the week. My name is Tony Bruschi. Sean Reed with us as well. Good morning or good afternoon or good day, I should say. Sean?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week. You have the chief of police assisting in returning personal items to family members of the victims. We learned that, or reminded, I should say, the investigators are human.
Yeah.
Chief of police is a dad. Then we get the information on this vehicle. Then there's a scream. Then there's a door apparently open on the early morning hours or earlier than noon when the 911 call came in of a neighbor apparently seeing the front door open. So a lot of information to try to digest. And should you not be scouring the internet, we are here to just give you a list of information that is new since you last checked in.
New and as factual and confirmed as we can get it. We're not dealing in a lot of the rumors and such. There's plenty of places for that. And if you'd like to go off, you know, a rabbit hole of all sorts of unverified insanity quite often sometimes, there's the internets for that. But we're going to really focus on the facts as we know them. We're going to start off today with a few new developments since our last podcast. And the latest was last night. Plainclothes officers on the evening of December the 8th, Thursday night, descended on the home unannounced, going in there for about an hour and then leaving in very much a rush. Nancy Liu of News Nation was there on the scene, and I'm going to play the audio. There's really not a lot of dialogue that went along with this scene, but I'm going to kind of give you some play-by-play of what we're seeing in this video clip. This is of the officers leaving the house and Nancy trying to ask a few questions, not getting a whole lot of response though as they came out.
Can you tell us why you're back inside? Can you tell us why we're back inside tonight?
And the about four, five, I think I counted five different officers.
Is there anything you can tell us?
Very plain clothes, sweatshirts, jeans, cowboy hats, and wearing a badge over, it's like a badge necklace, if you will. Now, we don't have any sort of verification on what type of officers these are. They came and what looks like a Dodge minivan, almost, very low profile to the ground. And then they left after about an hour. I think some almost wondering, are these investigators, you know, from the police force? But I do believe they are. I think we would have heard something if someone else had tried to break into the property. What these look like to me are federal marshals. Now, that's not confirmed, but from what we know of federal marshals, how they dress, how they act, their badge. We don't have a super close-up of the badge, but it does look to be like that. Federal marshals are responsible for several different things. Some may even say they're a step up above the FBI. They are responsible for court security, seeking fugitives, serving arrest warrants, and engaging in prisoner transport. The FBI, responsible for counterintelligence, counterterrorism, cybercrime, organized crime, public corruption, major thefts, and white-collar crimes. So when you have the two working together, marshals typically are the ones. FBI does this as well, but marshals, I don't know how to say this correctly, but it's almost like the cowboys, if you will, of the federal investigation force. They're very much out there, very much on the front lines, and a lot of times dealing with suspects and criminals straight up face to face. So as far as what they went into that home to get last night, your guess is as good as mine. Maybe just going in to confirm something. But they seem to have very much an intent and a purpose, going in, getting out, and not wanting to say anything to the media. Sean?
I would confirm with that statement.
That's what we saw last night. And again, the reporting from Nancy Liu of News Nation. Another piece of information that's come out over the last, I'd say, 12 to 24 hours is this information about a scream. Reports coming out saying that a man was nearby, a neighbor. He said he went through his normal wind-down routine after getting home late from work, feeding his cat, drinking some tea while playing video games on his PlayStation, and literally practicing his hobby of stick juggling. Then he went to bed at what estimates was about 4 a.m. Harsh said he can't be certain, but he dozed off early that morning, and he thinks he heard a scream from the vicinity of his neighbor's home. He told the Idaho Statesman, this is where this reporting is coming from, but it didn't arouse much of his attention. He said because he thought of it as more of a party sound, which wasn't out of the ordinary for the time or the setting. Don't blame him one bit. You're in a college town. This is a party house. You have party houses all around you. Hearing a girl scream in those settings, it's not always a sign of a horrible thing. It's a lot of laughing and screaming and this and that, not typically signs of struggle or a murder. He says, I didn't think anything of it. After what happened, I've definitely had second thoughts. Maybe it was not a party sound. I'm not sure what good it does for them now, he said, of not previously telling police after the detail occurred to him days later. After an initial conversation with a police officer that Saturday, or Sunday rather, Harsh said he already went back to investigators at the home to report a black luxury SUV that he hadn't seen in the neighborhood before, parked a few spaces from the front of the home when he made it back early that morning. That's all we have on that. And again, you have the question that comes up, well, how did the other roommates not hear the scream? Number one, we've talked about that. The basement of the home, former residents say they didn't hear a whole lot either when they were in that part of the home. But again, you also kind of become numb, if you will, to the sounds of a college town, to the sounds of college students after a while, and noises and, you know, disruption in the air, very common and very, very seldomly is the sign of some sort of horrible thing that went on like we saw here in this case.
I want to know how a door is open and information is now just coming in regarding that.
Well, that's
there was talk that the second floor sliding door was the point of entry.
Yeah.
And now there is discussion that a neighbor apparently saw the first floor door, which is the same level as the other two bedrooms of the surviving roommates, is open at 8:30 in the morning.
And that's an interesting question. Why are we just finding that out now? Why are we just hearing that now? And if the front, again, it's a college town. I don't know that it honestly is that red flag for anyone to really, oh my gosh, their door is open, without already knowing that there's something horrible that happened. A lot of kids, early 20-somethings, all that. I mean, that's something if you're around them, or a lot of them from time to time, people don't shut doors. And I would imagine in this town, you drive around probably more so than just a regular residential neighborhood. You're going to see more doors kind of cracked open, a little bit open here and there, than other, you know, more private neighborhoods. So I don't know that it really stood out to anybody, quite honestly, until it took a little bit of time and context to think, oh yeah, that door was opened. I don't know. That's just me speculating as to why maybe it didn't stand out to anybody and everybody running all these things through their minds 50 different times after the fact, then kind of going, oh, yeah, that was a little bit odd. What does it mean? I guess what does it mean to the crime? I don't know. I don't know that it really points to a whole lot other than maybe somebody left through that door. Maybe somebody went in through that door. How does it pertain to finding this individual at this point? I don't know that it does, but it is another piece of evidence, definitely, that an observation that has come out throughout the week. The big thing, I think, this week, if we were to sum up what they are looking for, two things, the Hyundai Elantra, and we're going to talk about that, and also the timeline search between some specific hours, and we'll get to both of those. The Hyundai Elantra, though, seemed to be one of the bigger pieces of evidence and a bigger piece of this puzzle that the law enforcement asking the public for assistance with. This was the release earlier in the week from the Moscow, Idaho detectives. They're interested in speaking with occupants of a white 2011 to 2013 Hyundai Elantra with an unknown license plate. Tips and leads have led investigators to look for additional information regarding that vehicle being in the immediate area of King Street residence during the early morning hours of November 13th. Investigators believe that the occupants of this vehicle may have critical information regarding this case. And the chief of police, James Fry, had this to say yesterday when asked about the vehicle and asked about a few other things that have come up in the investigation.
First, start by explaining why this search for this white vehicle.
So we have information of a white vehicle that was in the area either during the time frame of the homicide or around the time frame of the homicide. And we are just wanting to talk to the individuals who are in that vehicle. They may have some valuable information for us. And we're looking for a 2011 to a 2013 Hyundai Elantra. So any assistance you can give us, anybody that owns one, anybody that knows of someone who owns one or may have been driving one, if you could get a hold of us through our tip line or call us directly, we'd appreciate that.
This body cam image and the white car, is this the white car investigators are looking for?
So the body cam image that is out there from an officer who was on a call with an alcohol offense does have a white vehicle in it. This is not the vehicle that we are looking for. So we wanted to clear that up with all news media.
And finally, the tip line, the process. What do you want to tell the public about that?
So the tip line now will go to an FBI call center. We've done that because we started receiving many, many tips, and that call center can categorize those, and they can send those tips back to investigators so we can follow up and make sure that we continue with our investigation.
I think that's a very positive thing that it's going to the FBI call center rather than just at the department. I think they'll have a better way, better resources to kind of triangulate all that information, because there's so many people that I'm going to be calling in on this with any knowledge of seeing a white Hyundai Elantra of those years, quite honestly. And that's fine. I think that, you know, that's good. They can then start to narrow down. Yes, this is, you know, Jenny, the soccer mom who's drives one, and that's been confirmed this or there, or this one is, we don't know. Why was it here? Who was in it? And there's been something I have observed online through some of the Reddits and such is a lot of people taking pictures of kind of oddly placed white Hyundai Elantras in the area. I saw an image earlier today of one that clearly was very snow covered, had been sitting there for a while, kind of off by near it was a truck stop, but it was just kind of off by itself. Could have been absolutely nothing. And I would guess a majority of them are absolutely nothing, but everyone super vigilant right now and super aware, and hopefully one of these can lead to the information and finding the specific Hyundai Elantra that they're looking for.
The tip line, obviously, now with the federal level, hopefully something will come of that as well. Stalker updates. Is there any new tips and leads investigators are finding in that realm?
As far as the stalker goes, when we look back on that, and I first want to give the tip line, since he did mention it, in case anyone does want to call that, it's 208-883-7180, 208-883-7180. The stalker, that's something that had been talked about earlier on in the case, and police did go in, they did some investigating, they identified a specific incident from mid-October, in which Kaylee had reported to some of her friends and family that she felt uncomfortable. They looked into this specific incident, but investigators are still wondering, was this just kind of one isolated thing? Maybe there's more occurrences. Maybe there's a more ongoing occurrence that she'd been talking about. But the one that they looked into, it turned out to be two males inside a local business. They were inside with Kaylee for a moment. Kaylee walked out to her car. One kind of came out to her. One turned away. Detectives did contact both of them and learned the two were attempting to meet women at a business. Again, normal things for a college town. It was corroborated through additional investigation, and based on additional available information, detectives believe it was an isolated incident, not part of an ongoing pattern of stalking. And no evidence suggests the two males were involved with the murders. But investigators are still looking into information about Kaylee possibly having a stalker beyond, you know, two guys, you know, pushing their luck a little bit too hard at a bar and making someone uncomfortable. I believe they're wondering if there is something more unusual going on. And you got to look at it. These are very pretty girls. They get hit on, I'm sure, all of the time. But there's a difference between flirting and being hit on and someone actively following you around, not necessarily with your knowledge, desire, or permission, which is pretty much the definition of stalking. And they are kind of wondering, is there someone out there like that? And what's interesting, I mean, if you talk to any woman about their life and what they've been through, and you talk to someone who's maybe, you know, in their 30s or 40s, many of them, in fact, I think almost every woman I've ever known, dated, been friends with over the years, almost every single one of them has a story about having a stalker at one point in time, which is scary and sad, but it is the reality of the world that we're in. So though there may be more to that, but that's what we know at this moment. The missing timeline is also something that they are wondering about in great detail. That's what the investigation is trying to get information on between 9 p.m. November 12th and 1:45 a.m. on November 13th, when police believe Zaina and Ethan were at the Sigma Chi house. They've been asking anyone with information about their interactions, contacts, plans, or means of travel to share that with the department and the tip line. Earlier in the week, Brian Enten of News Nation did ask, I believe it was the president of the house, or at least one of the members who lived at the house, if they had any information, and it really not much at all was shared, other than they stated that there were no cameras on property. So people have been asking about that. Are there cameras? Are there Ring doorbells? Things of that nature. Apparently not a whole lot to be found there. I do wonder, though, there was a lot of people supposedly at this house at that time. Why have we not heard from anyone just to confirm, yeah, they were there that whole time, or no, they weren't? I'm surprised that there's been no speaking up about that as of yet.
We can only leave it to officials with information. Again, speculation, yep. Rumors, and, you know, I don't see the productivity in that. We can just hope that more information comes forth. When it is released, we will inform you.
Police are scaling back as well. That was a big headline earlier in the week. And not as, I think, something that needs to be alarming. I'll go through the statement and the article, and then we can kind of talk about it for a second. They're scaling back the probe into the quadruple murder at the university. They're removing 25% of cops assigned to the case. The Moscow Police Department announced this on Tuesday that six detectives, five support staff members are now working on the investigation. This is of a department of 30 people. So they still have more than a third of the department is working on this, at least. and that makes sense. The other ones kind of going back to beat patrol and things of that nature. That's not to be discouraging, because they're backed by 48 FBI agents, 30 Idaho State Police officers, and a separate forensic unit. Those folks, the state, the FBI, I think really doing a lot of the deeper investigative work on something like this. As I think we saw the example of last night with what appeared to be federal marshals stepping into the home. Again, I can't confirm they were federal marshals, but if I were to take a guess at who that was, it did not look like FBI. It did not look like local police. Very much the profile of a federal marshal. So they're digging. There's certainly a lot of people involved here. And I'd said this earlier in the week, when you get a little more focused down, a little more focused on specific investigators with specific roles, not just everybody, all hands on deck immediately, as we're trying to put all this together and figure out what's happening, probably a good turn for the investigation. One more thing that was being looked at and questioned earlier in the week, the dog. Numerous requests about the dog at the residence the morning of November 13th. And honestly, a little bit conflicting information, again, from the Moscow Police Department. I really think just a little bit of proofreading on some of these, going, does this contradict itself, would go a long way, because there's so much confusion that comes out of some of these statements that if just the wording was adjusted a little, there would be less of it, unless it's intentional. This was said earlier in the week as people asking, where did the dog go? Why was the dog not examined closer in case there was something on it? During the search of the home, the dog was found in a room where the crimes had not been committed. Officers did not find any evidence on the dog, and there was no indication the animal had entered the crime scene. It was then taken to animal services and released to a responsible person. Paragraph right after that. Bouncing off of, during the search of the home, the dog was found in a room where the crimes had not been committed. While the dog was in the house when officers arrived, it had not been determined where the dog was physically located when the murders took place. I'm kind of understanding what they're saying there, where they got there, and the dog was not in the area or the vicinity of the murders, but maybe they can't definitively say they know where the dog was because other people had arrived to the house since then, or before the police arrived. So they didn't know, did somebody let the dog out of a room or something of that nature? But then one would wonder, well, if you don't know that, then why is the dog being taken away so quick? But visibly, the dog did not have blood splatter or anything of that nature on it visibly. I don't think they can say forensically at all, because the dog was taken to animal services very quickly. And something that Steve Gonsalves even pointed out earlier in the week, saying, quote, the chain was broken on that because the animal was moved so quickly. And Steve speaking out this week also saying he's hiring private investigators, not having a lot of faith in this, but at the same time, hoping to be proven wrong, hoping and putting his faith and really, you know, wanting obviously the best outcome that they can get with the officers who are investigating this. But as a frustrated father of his daughter who was just ripped out of his life and his family's life so quickly, I get it. He's angry. He's on a mission to feel somewhat in control when the world is spinning out of control from him. I would probably be doing the exact same thing that he's doing, hiring investigators and trying to take this on as a dad. And we haven't heard from him in a couple days right now, so I don't know what exactly the progress is with him and investigators and his take on things. But someone who clearly, every time he spoke, looked exhausted, angry, upset, and all, of course, completely expected. I just hope that for the sake of him and everybody, the families, the friends, that there's something more this next week that can help make everybody feel that at least there's some solid ground going on this case to finding justice. Never going to take or bring these souls back, obviously, but getting some justice, I think, is the focus right now. And the fear, the possibility is this someone who could strike again? We don't know. We just don't know the profile of this person. Exactly why they struck at these kids specifically. And if this is someone who really does not like women, does not like young, attractive college women who may not have interest in them, are they going to go to another place and do similar things, acting out on their rage and anger that they hold if this individual has that personality type, as I'd mentioned earlier in the week, of like an incel or something of that nature?
So there are a lot of mysteries, a lot of pieces of the puzzles. And if you're looking for rumor and speculation, it's not hard to find across the internet. But with information as it comes in, some of these episodes will be longer than others with information that we are passing along to you.
And obviously, investigations don't take a break for the weekend. And neither do we. But this is just, it's the end of another week. We're going to be going on week number five, starting on really Sunday morning. And we will be here to keep you abreast of any breaking updates, special reports. We will definitely be putting those out for you here on the podcast. So be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of that as we get more information in on this absolutely heartbreaking case. And yeah, again, entering week number five. All right. This is a production of True Crime Today. You can check out True Crime Today wherever you download podcasts as well for more on this case and other true crime stories. And like I said, Lisa, be sure to press subscribe on this podcast so you don't miss any updates. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to Four Killed for What?